This is Billy Brim and the voice of One Witness Radio Broadcast, inviting you to stay tuned and walk along with us on our Summer 2009 Israel Tour. We trust you can feel you are a part of this seminar tour as we walk the Holy Land and consider its biblical past, its political and prophetic present, as well as its prophetic future. Let's see where we are today. Come along with us now. This is Billy Brim and the voice of One Witness Radio Broadcast. And we are standing today in the north of Israel at Kibbutz Misgav Am. And with me is Aryeh. Say shalom, Aryeh.
Shalom, Aryeh.
Ah! And Aryeh, where are you from originally?
I was born in Cleveland, Ohio, the United States of America, in 1940.
And you've been here at Misgav Am how long?
Since 1965.
Now here at Misgav Am, we are standing just above a fence that is the border into Lebanon. And as we look past this fence, we see villages. What did those villages used to be in the past? Start with Marjayun.
They used to be 50%, well, Marjayun as a specific place used to be a Christian village.
If you've read Brigitte Gabriel's book, that's where she was from.
It's right out here. And now, without going into too much detail, now it's no longer a Christian village. Christians don't live in this area anymore.
Who's in this area?
Shiites. And they all belong to the Hezbollah.
The Hezbollah. Every single thing we see, as we're looking in the mountains and we see several villages, everything is Hezbollah.
Yeah.
And we're not far from it. I mean, we could throw a stone over into there. Into Lebanon.
Well, a little bit further than a stone throw, but it's maybe 500 yards.
I want to go in with into how did this get to be Hezbollah? Now, we went on our bus into some history. And the history after World War I, when the Allies divided up this part of the country, Lebanon and Syria fell to France. Lebanon and Syria then became, Lebanon became independent and became a democracy. In the democracy of Lebanon, it was a parliamentary democracy. And in it, they had Christians, that was one party. They had Shia, they had other parties.
Okay.
The highest office that was held by who?
The highest office, well, it was a division. The highest office that the president had to be a Christian, and the prime minister had to be a Sunni Muslim, and the head of parliament had to be a Shiite, and a high-ranking officer, if not the head of the Lebanese army, had to be a Druze. And in that way, that was called power sharing. And that way, they gave each one of the different groups, of the four groups, sort of a say in the government. And that allowed it to function.
And it functioned, and it functioned very well. Beirut was the flower of pearl of the Middle East until something happened. And we're going to go into a little bit of what happened. Will you please explain to us the Islamic world division between Shia and Sunni?
Not really.
Oh, you won't? Well, thanks a lot.
No, not because I won't. It's because I don't know enough. I know that roughly it has to do with after the death of Muhammad. It has something to do with the secession of caliphhood. And the guy who the Shiites think should have been was assassinated. And his name was Ali. And that's one of the reasons, if not the major, that this schism in Islam came about.
The Islamic world, when Muhammad died, he didn't leave a clear person to take power. So the Sunnis say it should be a righteous person. The Shia say it should be one of Muhammad's family. And so they fought through the centuries, and the headquarters of, you might say, the chief city of Islam moved to Baghdad. And in Baghdad, Iraq, there was a terrible war between the Sunnis and the Shia. 90% of the world's Islamic world is Sunni, and 10% is Shia. But the Shia, who were the ones who were Ali,
And the Sunnis and the Shia fought at Karbala, and they cut off the head of Ali, and they kicked it like a football. And the Sunnis and the Shia hate each other. There are three places in the world where there are the Shia. The Shia are in Iran under Ahmadinejad. The Shia are here in South Lebanon. How did they get to be here? How did they take this over? In Jordan, where there are many Palestinians, the Palestinians rose up against the Hashemite king. This was in the 1970s. The Hashemite king, Hussein. They put them down. They shot them dead. Thousands. How many thousands?
In the 20s.
20,000 shot dead. Then the Arab world said, where are we going to send these people? And they decided to send them to Lebanon. They sent those Palestinians to Lebanon. They came down here in the south of Lebanon, which was not, it wasn't their place. But they said to the Shia here, hey, look, you can only get to so high an office. The Christians have the office. So they started a civil war. A civil war happened in Lebanon. As a result of their coming in here and the civil war, now the whole south of Lebanon is Shia and Hezbollah. Yeah, so, that's how it got to be. Good enough, good enough. Not exactly a total picture for you, because the Palestinians are not Shia, they're Sunni. But the Shia, who is financed by Iran, is behind all this Hezbollah over here. They are also now financing Hamas because it's to their purposes. Yeah, to their
benefit. All the terrorists, the international Islamic Muslim terrorist organizations, work together when it comes to a common enemy. It doesn't matter whether they're Shiite or they're Sunni. Al-Qaeda under Osama bin Laden is a Saudi Arabian. He's a Sunni. The Taliban in Afghanistan are Sunnis. In Gaza, the Hamas are Sunnis, even though they're supported by the Hezbollah and by Iran, by the Shiites. The Muslim Brotherhood, to a certain extent,
in Egypt.
In Egypt, works together on common external goals. I mean, they're not happy when the Hezbollah was playing around inside Egypt. They didn't like that very much. But the two of them can certainly get together and blow up something in Jordan, or blow up an American installation, or whatever. The point is that the enemy of my enemy is my friend, is an Arabic saying, and that even though there is an internecine hatred between the Sunnis and the Shia internally, and they can be blowing each other up all over the place, but when it comes to a common external enemy, i.e. the United States, Western Europe, democracy, Christianity, and of course Israel, they work together, and the religious differences are put aside for the moment.
Well, now, in the 2005 war, what happened? 2005, that's not very far or long ago. 2006, sorry.
What happened was that for some reason, which won't take too much time, there's only
4 minutes
time left, yeah. So, in short, what happened was that the Hezbollah wanted to release prisoners that Israel held, so they decided to capture prisoners. And so they did an ambush on our patrol road, and what really, the thing that set the war off, was that as a diversionary tactic to cover up the fact that they were ambushing the patrol, they opened fire all along the line. In other words, from Syria all the way to Rosh Hashanah. Just the whole thing, just woof. And no country in the world cannot allow itself not to respond to something like that. In other words, more than the ambush on the convoy that started the war, actually, in my opinion, that diversionary attack for hours, for days, the whole line, Israel had to react to that. He just forced war on us, the Hezbollah. And apparently, because it wasn't planned from Iran, apparently he got his wrist slapped by Ahmadinejad. Yeah, was very upset that he did that. Now understand, we're not happy with the way the war ended, really. But these guys took a clobbering. They were sitting here for 3 years quiet.
Yeah, and they took a clobbering from Israel.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah. And so it's been quiet since. What do you think? Are they planning anything? Is anything going? What's...
In my opinion...
Yeah, what do you think about Iran? What do you think about Ahmadinejad?
First of all, there's an interesting point in the few minutes that we have left about Iran. People, the Iranian people are a marvelous, old, ancient civilization. These guys are not these crazy fanatics. This is like, to a certain extent, this is like Germany being taken over by the Nazi party and this terror imposed. The Iranian people are not Ahmadinejad, and they are not the Ayatollahs. It's a big country, and it's diverse, and they've had many religions in their country. And I'm waiting and expecting for the Iranians to do the job, you know, and get rid of this menace. The Iranians are not happy. The people in the street, they're not happy with what's going on, and they're not happy with their international image, because that's not them, and that's not what they want. This radical Islamic revolution is not what they want. They wanted to clean up their own country. That's cool. But Ahmadinejad and the Ayatollahs are going too far out externally. Internally, they're too heavy a hand. The Persians won't take that. The Iranians won't.
Does Ahmadinejad support this place back here? Does he?
Oh, absolutely. Billions of dollars, guys. Everybody gets paid by the Hezbollah, the teachers, the doctors, the nurses, everybody. The militias, they're all well paid. Everybody is paid. Everybody does work, civil works here. There's, like I said before, there's more buildings than there are people. There's trenches and underground bunkers and everything. Who does all this? These people, for the first time in their lives, are active, and they're getting paid, and they have work, so they do what they do. They go.
Terrorism pays, huh?
Terrorism is big business, and it works. Until, if and when, in Iran, things change, and the tap gets closed on these guys, then perhaps the local people understand. Most Muslims in the world are just like everybody else. Huh? They want to live quietly and raise their kids and get on in the world. They're not into all this stuff. They're not into it. And I wish that they would find the strength, the internal strength, to stand up and say, whoa, that's enough.
To say, I wish you were here with us, radio audience. I wish you were here. This is Billy Brim and RA saying, shalom, shalom.
Did you feel you were there? I hope so. Watching the fig tree, Israel, is a key to understanding what's going on in the world today. On a previous tour, we made an Israel documentary DVD suitable for television. It helps you see the political ins and outs and how they can flow with God's plan for Israel or how they can fight against it. This one-hour, high-quality DVD is available for $30 plus shipping. Now here's a second offer. It is a very elementary study of the Hebrew language. You will receive 5 DVDs of Billy Brim teaching elementary Hebrew along with a 10-page study guide. This package is available for $50 plus shipping. If you would like both offers, the Israel documentary and the elementary Hebrew lessons, you may have them for $70. To order, call 1-800-972-3447. That's 1-800-972-3447. Or write Billy Brim, Box 40, Branson, Missouri, 65615. This is Billy Brim. Shalom.